Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we have George Vixen joining us soon. And I believe we're going to be discussing somewhat of the polar shift. We'll still be discussing the Mayan prophecy. However, there's areas that we want to go into tonight to discuss this. And specifically, and I pulled up there's a video, a short video, YouTube video, that talks about this to a large extent. It's about 7 minutes long, and it's called the Polar Shift, the Mayan and I Ching prophecies. And it's interesting how these prophecies together are identical, though they're in their ending time in 2012, actually December 21st. They both have that same prophetic ending. And I think since George is a little late joining us, I'm going to
go
right to that video and explain more or less what we're talking about tonight, and George can elaborate it on it afterwards.
The Mayan calendar seems to say that the world will end in 2012. It's a startlingly precise prediction from a culture that took its calendar very seriously. The Mayan civilization flourished in Central America from the 6th to the 9th century AD. They were obsessed with timekeeping. Their calendar was incredibly precise, more accurate even than our own. Its interlocking timescales of lunar, solar, and planetary cycles could accurately predict a solar eclipse thousands of years into the future.
The Mayans were kind of like shamanic scientists, and they were obsessed with time, synchronicity, and consciousness, and they spent like 1,000 years going back to even previous civilizations trying to put together a model of when this big transformation was going to take place.
The calendar is also prophetic. In the 8th century AD, it predicted that white-skinned, bearded gods would arrive from across the sea on March 5th, 1519. On that precise date, Cortez and his conquistadors arrived in the New World. Was it coincidence, or was the calendar prophetically accurate? The answer matters, for the Mayan calendar also predicts the end of the world as we know it, on the date that the Mayans called Unab Ku.
On the winter solstice, 2012, December 21st, the sun rises within the dark rift at the center of the Milky Way. And they call this dark rift a cosmic mother. They also kind of refer to it as a black hole. And only in the last 5 years have Western astronomers discovered that there is actually an enormous black hole at the center of the Milky Way, which is at the center of our galaxy.
Modern astronomers concur with the ancient Mayans. On December 21st, 2012, the Earth will be in exact alignment with the Sun and the center of the Milky Way galaxy, a galactic event that takes place only once every 25,800 years. No one knows what effect this extraordinary alignment will have on the Earth, but the Mayans believed it would be dire. Geophysicists have a theory that is strikingly similar to the events predicted by the Mayan alignment. This phenomenon is called pole shift, in which the entire mantle of the Earth would shift in a matter of days, perhaps hours, changing the position of the North and South Pole, causing worldwide disaster. Earthquakes would rock every continent. Massive tsunamis would inundate coastal cities. It would be the ultimate planetary catastrophe. As unlikely as this theory seems, it is backed by science. Albert Einstein first suggested it in 1955. And a new study from Princeton University reveals that the poles have shifted before. The North Pole rested in the middle of the Pacific 800 million years ago, placing Alaska at the equator. Even if this pole shift took place slowly over years, it would result in global climate change and shifting sea levels. If it took place rapidly, it would mean planet-wide disaster and mass extinction of species. On the other side of the world, the 2012 date also emerges in prophecy. According to one theory, the identical doomsday date can be found in China's oldest text, the I Ching, or Book of Changes. The I Ching is usually used for personal fortune-telling. You ask a question of the text, then you toss three coins. If they are mostly tails, you draw a straight line. If they are mostly heads, you draw a broken line. This is repeated six times until the questioner has a series of six straight and broken lines called a hexagram.
There's 64 possible combinations, and there are little texts appended to each of these hexagrams, and that gives you some reading on the future.
The questioner looks up his hexagram in an index and finds a prophecy.
The remarkable thing about the I Ching is that if you pose a question to this oracle, you will discover that you receive an answer that is astoundingly appropriate to the question being asked.
Advice can range from relationships to travel to career guidance. But scientific rationalists counter that the evocative language of the I Ching only makes it seem accurate. But only in the past decades has the ancient I Ching become an oracle of doom. The story begins with a controversial researcher named Terence McKenna.
Terence McKenna was kind of the subcultural Timothy Leary of the 1980s and 90s. He did these kind of mathematical graphings with the I Ching and turned it into a kind of map of time.
Before his death in 2000, McKenna noticed an unrecognized pattern in the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching. The six lines and 64 possible combinations can be expressed as a ratio of change in each hexagram and plotted on a graph. When McKenna mapped that graph over a timeline, he found intriguing correlations that matched all 4,000 years of recorded history. His graph starts with the I Ching's creation in China's Shang Dynasty, the same period as the dawn of civilization in other parts of the world. The 64 hexagrams repeat 64 times over history. McKenna called his theory Time Wave Zero. The highs and lows of his I Ching graph seem to have accurately predicted the fall of the Roman Empire, the discovery of the New World, and the world wars of the 20th century. But the strangest thing of all was that McKenna's timeline came to an end on one specific date, December 21st, 2012.
It was later that McKenna discovered that the Mayan civilization ended its calendar at the point of 2012. He felt there was something truly prophetic about that date.
Did the I Ching from ancient China and the Mayan calendar from medieval Mexico independently arrive at the same date for doomsday?
What I feel is particularly remarkable about the current time is that we have a number of prophecies that all seem to imply that something is going to happen in the 21st century.
Yes. Hello, George.
Hello.
Hello, George.
Yeah, hi. Is you there?
Oh, that's much better. We couldn't hear you at first. It was.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you, but very, you know, very, it's all broken up. What are you on a cell phone or?
Well, hold on for a minute.
You're okay now. Don't do anything.
Are you there, George?
He was fine then.
Yeah. We have George kind of on the line with us here, and hopefully that...
He's trying to fix his phone. I don't know whether he's in a cell phone or...
Hello?
That's better.
Sounds like you hung up. Yeah, you hung up.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So that's okay. George is having problems with his phone there, I guess. Trying to get hold of us.
He'll give us a call.
We'll try again. But in the meantime, I've got to know, we've got this 2012 prophecy. Okay.
From the I Ching and the Mayan calendar.
Yeah. It's not just that, but we also have a mention of it here in, hang on one second, Nostradamus' work. All right.
So that's the third one.
Right. And,
so we should play that
so
as
I
well.
Thought we might, well, George is trying to connect with us here. We'll try to, we'll play this one as well. And see if this is any good.
Michel Chaumerat is a respected Nostradamus archivist and an expert on...
I meant to say, this is from the History Channel as well.
...the seer's handwriting. He and Maria Fadiga examine the writing.
There are the graphic elements. If you look at a G and start to search for it inside the text, or a P, or in any case, any consonant that dives beneath a line, it is evident enough that I am going
After
to
After careful comparison, the specialists conclude that the handwriting in the lost book is neither Nostradamus's nor Caesar's. But this important fact remains. Nostradamus's name is on the book, and he is clearly listed as the author in the library's first written records of the book's acquisition in the 1800s.
It's entirely likely that in some obscure library, maybe in Ceylon, maybe in Avignon, the manuscript survived from its original creation through copies. It was copied as it got dog-eared and time-worn and copied again. And as it was copied, certain components were forgotten. They could reproduce them, but they didn't quite know what they meant.
The complex journey of this manuscript through time makes one thing clear. It has been treated as an item of great importance, worthy of copying and safeguarding for hundreds of years. If time has erased definitive proof of the true origins of the manuscript, there yet remain those who firmly believe that Nostradamus is the writer of this book, and that it is his son, Caesar, who in turn passes it on for posterity. The inscription on the last page of the book reinforces its forbidden status, stating that it has been given by monks to Cardinal Barberini, who is in charge of the Vatican Library.
No one from the church would have allowed anyone else outside the church to see this. Barberini turned it over to people that he could trust to interpret it.
Seven indicates that the constellation of Ophiuchus will play a role.
The next image moves us a little bit further ahead of time. It shows the eight-rayed star, the eight-spoke wheel at the top with the banner. And it also shows the Tree of Life being impinged upon by some monster. In the sky, if you drew a line from the stinger of the scorpion to the tip of Sagittarius's arrow, the line would go directly through the center of the galaxy. The space between Scorpio and Sagittarius becomes very, very important. And in this image, with the addition of the Paschal Lamb, the Lamb of Revelation, there's the notation that this represents the end time. In this image, we see, again, the eight-spoked wheel at the top. I should perhaps explain why the eight-spoked wheel is so important. In the sky, there's a great cross that does not move, and it's formed by the center of the galaxy to the edge of the galaxy, and from the center point of our celestial equator to the southern point of the celestial equator. That's the divine cross. Down here on the ground, we have the mundane cross that is formed by the angles between equinox and solstice and so forth. So the eight-armed cross, the eight-rayed star, the eight-armed cross, the eight-wheeled spoke, represents the alignment in space and time of the divine cross above and the terrestrial mundane cross below. Now, curiously enough, this alignment only happens once every 13,000 years.
These crosses have not aligned since 11,000 BCE, roughly 13,000 years ago, meaning the phenomenon is now poised to occur again.
The next image in the series is the end-all and be-all of the whole sequence. It shows the exact time when the apocalypse is going to happen. At the top, we see our alignment of divine cross and terrestrial cross. Below that, we see three eclipses connected to an eclipse of the moon. If we look for three solar eclipses within a time period that is also bound by very significant lunar eclipses, we come up with a 20-year time period from 1992 to 2012.
I just want to go back and see if George is with us here. I want to see if he... Hi, George. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm back with you again.
Oh, great.
That's good.
Hey, listen, we've got about 2 minutes left on that particular video. I was wondering if you might want to listen to it. And
keep rolling it.
Yeah, we'll comment on it right after.
Okay.
Hang on.
Ancient and modern cultures alike have targeted the rapidly approaching year of 2012 as one of major planetary significance.
This is the only image we have from the Western tradition that pinpoints this time period this precisely. Other traditions around the planet have pointed to the same time period. Most notably, the Maya, who pinned the end of their calendar to the 2012 alignment of the sun in the center of the galaxy. It's like a universal awareness that when certain things align, the sun and this mysterious dark core of humanity, this is the point of crisis.
Go all the way down before you decide to change, and we are rapidly descending down into the very, very, very bottom of the barrel, and soon we're going to run out of food, soon we're going to run out of air, soon we're going to run out of clean water, we're going to run out of oil, we're going to run out of ammunition. These things are all going to happen.
The next image in the series shows the same divine cross, terrestrial cross at the top. And below it appears to be a boat, an ark, and it's sort of a casual reference back to God's promise that we won't use water this time, it'll be fire. So the idea of the bark or the boat here is what spiritual authority will save us.
I find that so many deluges and deep floods shall befall the world before the universal conflagration, that there shall be scarcely any land that is not covered by water. The rains in many countries shall be so slight, and so much fire, and so many meteorites shall fall from the sky, that nothing shall remain that is not consumed.
Image 72 is probably the warning of what is going to happen if we don't do this thing right. You notice, first off, the Wheel of Fortune at the top no longer has any spokes. It's empty. That means that time has ended. It's no longer turning. There's no axle in the center of time.
George,
that was scary. But who put that together?
That was History Channel, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. And
I don't know whether you heard the earlier one. We played one that talked about the Mayans, the I Ching, and then this one with Nostradamus, all coming up with the same end.
I heard a little bit from the beginning. I was having some problems with the phone here. We had a big storm that came to the East Coast here. That's what's causing the on and off again.
It looks like it's ready to start up here pretty soon, but it hasn't hit us yet.
We had a storm last night.
We've been hit by waves like this for the last week or two, and it's just crazy weather right now.
But you know, even here and now in the Northeast and in the upstate New York, we're seeing crazy weather patterns and severe and violent thunderstorms, floods, all kinds of strange things happening. But that's
we haven't
going
had
on.
Floods. We've had flooding, but not floods.
I mean, it's going on all over the country and all over the world.
All over the world. Mm-hmm.
Just like they said, it would happen. Nostradamus
mm-hmm.
said in the last days he saw. If you heard that, he saw the violent eruptions of the earth, where there'd be all the land would be in the water and
consumed by fire.
Yeah, but a lot of it would be water, and a lot of it would be fire.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fire, and
mm-hmm.
It's just that you can see that Mother Earth is just changing. And
they also talked in the I Ching about the polar shift.
The polar shift, exactly right.
That you've talked so much about, George.
And they listened to, they brought up Terence McKenna, how he saw in the I Ching, that was his basically his discovery mathematically. He saw that through following the course of the I Ching, there were these major things that happened. Okay, and human
history. He plotted it on a graph.
Right, you know that because you told us, George.
I think Terence McKenna called it novelty, where you have eventide of novelty,
right.
of high points and low points of civilization.
Right,
but they fell on each. They went according to the math.
Right.
Of, the I Ching, and also. And it ended the
December of 2012.
December 21st, 2012.
Yes.
And, and the same way that the Mayans did, and the same way that Nostradamus did.
Yes.
But that so many others have as well that we haven't brought up yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, with Terence McKenna, he found that there is a cycle that is repeating itself.
Yeah.
And he was able to tap into that, even though that cycle also. Related to the novelty of awareness. And even though it does end in 2012, who's to say that it just doesn't start again? It comes to a point where it reaches. And from there, it can start again, or it could head off into into another direction.
The way
it
was interpreted, or whoever interpreted Nostradamus's drawings and things, indicates that the wheel of time has run out.
There's no spokes left in the wheel.
No more spokes left in the drawing of the wheel of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there are actually eight spokes in that, but it also represented the cross. Okay, the great cross that in the sky.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The celestial cross that only appears every 13,000 years,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's due to appear in 2012, right? And that same eight point cross or alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and what does that mean?
Well, it means that there's we're due for a major cataclysmic
huge change.
Huge
that's
change.
What, that's what that
extreme
means.
Change
every...
in consciousness and.
Well, and that's
whatever.
When they had the
polar
shift, too.
Yeah.
Well, the Mayans do talk about, a change in consciousness. But total destruction, that's just one half of a possibility.
Well, you were talking about that with Drunvalo. Now, I tried to review this. I was going to tell you this because I tried going back to them. And when I went back to the YouTube channel that they're on, every single one of those played the same video. When it didn't play set 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or whatever, it only played. It kept whatever number you hit went right back to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So in that prophecy series,
and if you
look, do you remember the page that you sent to me? Yeah,
yes.
That page has totally changed. All right, that page, that link that you sent. So the one on YouTube changed the whole format of that channel, I guess.
Let me tell the audience what we're talking about. There's a new video that just came out, and Drumbelow Melchizedek calls it "The Prophecies from the Heart," and he talks about it's eight videos It's a small workshop, and I think they're about 10 minutes each.
Right.
But he goes into some of his teachings and into prophecies from the heart of what the Mayans talk about as being the what's to be experienced during this time.
Right.
And,
so what
just explain for a second. We can't go back. We can only get into that first the first one. Okay, right now. For some reason, there's a problem there with those videos. And
mm-hmm.
I wasn't able to review the fourth, fifth, and sixth one that you had mentioned.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I had to. So what I did is resorted to these tonight because I, and these weren't bad, but it gives an elementary kind of introduction to what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But which is good. You know, it's always good to rehash what we're talking about. You know.
Yes.
And for our new listeners. But I wanted to say that there's two scenarios. One is the Mayans say that everything will change, but it's not going to be bad. Then you get Nostradamus who says it's going to be bad, okay? And you have the I Ching that says it's the end of time. But you know the only one that says it's not going to be bad is the Mayans.
Mm-hmm.
And said it's going to be anything. They just said that's the end of time. There is no good or bad.
Yeah, well, I understand.
Ending of its time as we understand it, because the illusion, we won't be living within the illusion. And that is what the Mayans consider how we view the world.
But
because
also, like the illusion will be collapsing. The Earth will be collapsing in itself, in its own way, polar shift,
mm-hmm.
and these changes will be catastrophic. And I'm curious too, if any of this will be brought upon by man-made, screwing around with the weather. But at the same time, regardless if it's man-made or not. It's upon us.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's upon us.
It was supposed to be.
So I don't know.
But you're looking at it and evaluating from a polarized perspective.
Yeah.
Of good and bad, or a two-sided affair. Now, what the Mayans are talking about they're not talking about a polarized view or a world or a split world.
Yeah, but I see that where I get confused in that if the there was one thing a while back we played another video by a Mayan shaman we played it on one of the shows here and the shaman stated that there was nothing to fear and that the change would be benevolent change we would change to a higher and better
consciousness.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
world or whatever. And, but yet, you have the others that are much more revelatory in their sense of gloom and doom, and basing it on scientific evidence of the polar shift, the polar historical calamities. You kind of got to wonder. And it's not so much a bipolar. It's just two different views or three different views. And I'm of the belief that I don't see how they cannot be a cataclysmic event. All right, if there's going to be a polar shift.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are going into a polar shift. There's no doubt about that. And these things do recycle itself. About every 13,000 years, and this we know is going on now. Things change, and we've talked about the precession of the equinox. We've been talking about that for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
In a matter of speaking, we're just coming around the neck of the woods where we're receiving energy from the sun, the basic sun that we revolve around. So we're more awakened to light and to consciousness. And it's a peak period in our movement in the equinox.
Oh, yeah.
Every 13,000 years, we go through this cycle of waking up and falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
now we're
yeah.
at a we're at a point where we're waking up, and this basically is a time where we will our consciousness will be able to adapt and to create what we see now. I mean, what's happened since the 1900s? Before the 1900s, you know, we didn't have the communications that we have now, or even the thought of going to the moon. We've gone a long ways in 100 years.
George, we got a caller here. I want to see if would you mind if he joins us? See if
no, go right ahead.
Hang
Hello.
On. Hang on. Hang on. Oh, boy, this, there we go. Hey, caller, 516, would you like to join in?
Yes.
Go ask who you are. What's your name?
My name is David.
David, how are you?
Hello, Dave.
I'm good. Hey, George. I had a really difficult time getting on, I got to tell you. Not the phone call, but the actual, you know, computer thing. It's not my deal. Anyway, Mr. Steele, there was something I wanted just to bring to your attention. It's just a perspective. If the Mayans are talking about the end of time, well, what is time? Is it the measurement of the Earth, the amount of, well, we call it time, is the measurement of the Earth's rotation around its axis? And if time is ending, then I'm guessing that the Earth is going to stop rotating on its axis in one direction and then reverse and start going in the other direction.
Possibly, but then wouldn't that be still be time, or wouldn't it just stop? Like, for instance, if you go into the Christian revelation, that everything is supposed to stop at a certain time and all the planets are supposed to fall and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So... I mean, you could even go that route if you wanted to go further. But as far as the end of time, space is supposed to end as well.
As
we know it, yeah. So, but if you end time and space, then there is no Earth. There's no world left. You know, it's we're transdimensional, if you will. We're we'll be in another dimension at that point. Either we'll all be dead, or we will all be evolved into some other higher level of a higher dimension. And,
Dave, when you talk about the Earth stopping, time is a three dimensional understanding, and that basically is. Inhibited by electricity, by electromagnetics. Once you eliminate the electromagnetic physical boundaries, there is no time.
Right, so what you're saying is that, well, let's put it this way, if the Earth stops, then those three parameters cease to exist and the time stops. And it can restart going in the opposite direction. You know, there could be the polar shift, and then it would just, you know, start winding the clock to the other direction.
But then
well, I don't think the Mayans are talking about this time of time change.
Can I just interject? If the world starts turning the opposite way, then what would happen with that reverse time?
I wouldn't call it reverse time. It would just be time. You know, it's just time measuring in a different direction, I guess. We continue to go around the sun, just that we're, you know, instead of having sunrise on Montauk, we'd have sunset at Montauk, if Montauk's still going to be here at that point. And I honestly don't think it will be. But the other thing that George said was, you know, was very, very accurate, and that is that we're familiar with space-time, but the opposite is time-space, with three dimensions of space and one dimension of time, when we could literally invert and become part of time-space, we will have three dimensions of time and one dimension of space. It's a whole different existence. And that's where, maybe that's what you're talking about, is that all humanity is how do we put this, living in a different space, a different dimension, as you said before, Mrs. Steele.
Right. Yeah. No, I
everybody, that's a possibility.
All of the things we've been talking about over the last course of this show, for about 2 years now, all of the things that we brought up, including the all of these prophecies and the Melchizedek and the Lungo lectures and all of these other things, have all stated that we are in that we are headed toward an end time and an end of space and time.
And a
jump to another dimension, right? A transdimensional integration, if you will. Is that true, George, or am I hallucinating?
No, you're not hallucinating, but
I think that's where we've been able to understand that space and time factor is very hard to get over. Because it's what imprisons us as entities.
And yes, it does. But it's part of the reality that we are attached to right now, and that is the third dimension.
Dave just hung up, but I want to thank Dave for calling in.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for your input there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're on a collision course with destiny here. And from every
why do you say a collision course with destiny?
Because I think it's going to be a collision, George. I think we
if you look at it from a polarized perspective.
I was going back over 2 years ago. Okay, I was going back to a show we did 2 years ago.
Yes.
And we actually started this Mayan calendar series April 20th show.
Yes.
And we began explaining this, and we started to delve in all other areas surrounding it, but essentially, from what I was going back to that show 2 years ago and trying to recollect what I was doing or what we were 2 years ago, not only in that discussion but in the in time,
yeah.
And the current events of that period. And what was happening, and if you remember, we were starting. By April, I think in April 20th, Obama had just 2007. Obama had just announced his candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you know there was almost 2 years of nothing but Obama Hillary on the air at that time. So, but if you look how far we progressed in 2 years, and how far the economy and world affairs and affairs have happened, what has happened is this seemed to get progressively worse. And then in September of last year, before the election, we had the big bailout and the big scare. And then of course, now we're facing 10-12% unemployment nationally. And so we're back in 2007, we were actually at about 5% unemployment. Things were quite much more optimistic. So all of these prophecies seem to be correct that we were headed at that time for a financial collapse.
Well, that was right. We were in the sixth day, or
right.
Excuse me, the fifth day.
Fifth day or fifth night, right?
The fifth day. And that basically is dealing with the polarity of our consciousness, good and bad.
Right.
The day period was basically. It was a height in the accomplishments that we've had as human beings. And I think we talked a lot about nanotechnology, where we've come from and where we are right now.
Right.
The fifth night now was the dark side of the polarity of the accomplishments from the fifth day. Nanotechnology, I mean, you could use it for good and remanufacturing DNA in the body, but there's also the negative effect from that of actually a change in the body structure. And, you know, this is something out of Star Wars. But we have the ability to do that also. And it's a matter of putting it in motion. And where we are now with the sixth day is that we've gone through the accomplishments. We've gone through recognition, both good and bad, and now what we're doing is coming to some kind of a determination and intent of where to take this to. And that's why we're coming up with now with the crashing and the falling of the negative aspects that we've come to recognize.
Now, I'm just curious, George. I know you're a evangelical Lutheran. Is that correct?
Yes, a Christian. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, in your religion, do they talk about an apocalypse, and is it synchronized with the I Ching, the Mayan calendar, and so
2012,
forth?
2012.
With 2012.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I guess some people could read into, let's say, Revelations and the end times and what they talk about and use it as a comparison of what we've experienced. Just like you could take Revelations, I think, from chapter 7 to chapter 14, and you can relate that to the aliens abducting people, or they talk about the about people being controlled like animals, and this is some of the powers that these the powers would be. And if like I said, you can relate to the alien perspective from chapter 7 to 14, but this is something you're going to have to read personally.
So, where?
Anything else that you find similar, or?
Well, you know, I guess you know, I could make a stand on it that, as other people have tried,
mm-hmm.
But I myself, I just don't have time for that. And I'm sure you can make an argument, but you know, you just have to find the right sections to go to.
Is
I mean, you can do any, you could pull anything out of the Bible. You really can.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
With the Bible code, actually.
I wondered if there was any kind of like timeline.
I don't know of any. There, like I said, there's been things written. But I haven't really spent much time with that.
Yeah, good.
Because that'd be the Christian concept of what we're talking about, and it'd be interesting to kind of. I don't have any knowledge on that myself, so I thought be interesting if one of our callers does, and one of our listeners does, they could call in and help us with that.
Well, you see, the Mayans were looking in the end of time. It's the illusion they know that we create ourselves, which create this world, and this is an illusion within ourselves. But it's also a dual reality of good and right, good and wrong, left and right. Because that is part of our third, three-dimensional experience.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is hooked up in duality. So it's looking at the world from something that doesn't have a counterpart. Now I mentioned before, you know, just like in reaching an objective,
mm-hmm.
What you have to do is put your intent, change your intent for that objective. And by following your intent, you'll reach your objective.
I just pulled up the sixth chapter of Revelation, and this is where it talks about the horsemen of the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to see how that relates to alien. I could see.
Leo. 7 to 14.
Okay, it says, after these things, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, on the sea, or on any tree. So for some reason, there wouldn't be any wind.
Yeah, any wind.
Okay, no breeze. Then I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God, and he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea, saying, "Do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads." All right? And I heard the number of those who were sealed, and 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel were sealed. And of the tribe of Judah, 12,000 were sealed, and of the tribe of Reuben, 12,000 were sealed, every 12,000 there was another seal, right? So, and it goes on, and it goes on, and it goes on to about another tribe and another tribe, all right? So, now all these tribes are sealed. And then one of the elders answered, saying to me, "Who are these arrayed in white robes, and where did they come from?" So, are these essentially aliens? Or alien beings that are descending to Earth to judge, or is it people that have evolved enough to judge the rest of the world?
What do you think, George?
That's what it's saying. Is that's the final judgment? And I said to him, "Sir, you know." So he said to me, "These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation and washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple, and he who sits on the throne will dwell among them, and they shall neither hunger anymore nor thirst anymore, and the sun shall not strike them, nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne with shepherd that will shepherd them and lead them to living fountains of water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." And that's 144,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, is that 144,000 to the hundredth power, or I mean, how are they?
That's not very many.
No, it's not a lot of people if you think at 144,000. You know.
Well, I see a little bit differently. I wasn't referring to that to the aliens. It was chapter 7, not 6. You were just quoting 6.
No, that was 7. I just read
7.
Six.
Where does it mention Wormwood?
Wormwood?
Yeah.
Let's see. Probably 6, I think.
It's a Wormwood section that caught my attention there. But going back to the 144,000,
yeah,
you know.
But they talk about the prophet in chapter 6. Okay, that's about the four horsemen.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the Lamb open one of the seals and heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder, "Come and see." And I looked and behold, a white horse. He who sat on it had a bow and a crown and was given him, and he went out conquering and to conquer.
Yeah.
And when he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come and see." And another horse, fiery red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that people should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword.
Mm-hmm.
And when he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come and see." So I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius,
mm-hmm.
and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine." When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, "Come and see." And so I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and the name of him who sat on it was Death, and Hades followed him with him. And power was given to him over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beast of the earth. Now, that's so bizarre, because there is Africa, the continent.
Famine.
Yeah. That's one of the four major continents.
They've seen nothing but hunger.
Yeah.
Famine.
Yeah, that's it for most
plague.
of their existence, but at least for the last 21st for the 20th and 21st century. And when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altars the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, will you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on earth?" And then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed. I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood. And the stars of heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place. And the king of the earth, the great men, the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man, hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. And for the great days of his, for the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand?" Now that's the sixth chapter.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Look at the eighth chapter.
Eighth chapter is he opened the seventh seal.
Yeah, I'll just all look right. And see if.
Yeah, just read that. He opened the seventh seal.
Why don't you talk to George for a minute there, and I'll
yeah.
look at...
You know, I got to go back to the 144,000.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm reading out of that is basically the experiences that we as people are to experience. And that's like 144 different experiences that this dimension of reality offers for us to perceive and to experience.
Well, it's odd to me that there's 144, which is what, a gross? All right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's an allotted number. That's a mathematical grouping, okay, mm-hmm. known for many centuries. So, but the significance of 144, I'm not really sure why they would be 144.
Oh, the name of the star is Wormwood.
All right, but let's look at it this way.
I found the Wormwood connection. It's in Chapter 8. That's the name of the star?
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm.
The name of the star is Wormwood, and a third of the waters became Wormwood. And many men died from the water because it was made bitter. And that was...
the star is Wormwood. Okay.
Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound."
It gets worse. Yeah. It only gets worse. You go in a Christian...
So the
not
name of
Nostradamus and you know all the other ones.
And Revelation. Now the name of the star is Wormwood. Now, is that Cirrus or is
well,
that?
Well, I was relating that to Nibiru.
Oh, Nibiru. Okay.
Nibiru, the 12th planet.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think with the power that that this Wormwood has, it's like the power of Nibiru. And the gods and the deities that come from it, and
well,
now it does come around every so many years.
It's interesting that you said that because there was another video that I had watched earlier tonight about the Mayans, and they had a celebration in April for Arizona in Sedona to celebrate the return of the ancestors.
Yes,
and they were talking about this, where I believe they believe that the ancestors are, you know, the those who created. You with us, George? Mayer?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
I said the ancestors. They're celebrating the return of the ancestors this year, and because they believe that they will be coming very soon, or if not already here.
Uh huh.
You know, some are already here and have returned to help the Mayan and all of humanity to evolve into this to alert them and to help us through what's about to happen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that I wondered about, because in Melchizedek he talked about 200,000 or something like. He didn't say 144,000. He talked about some 200 or 250,000 or 250 million or some astronomical figure of souls that are being born now in this world in the last 5 years or so.
Yes.
All of these souls that are coming and being born, and they're coming down to help us. To help us evolve into that higher being, so they're spirits that are taking human form to allow us to guide us into the next few years.
Yeah,
he talked about that, and I don't know.
What I'd like to do is jump back to a minute to what we were talking about before about 144,000.
Right.
Now. And just taking a look at 144, and if you want, you can relate that to the harmonic scale of music.
Right.
And each octave, you have 12 notes, plus the 13th is really the first of the second octave. In scales, you have 12 scales with 12 different keynotes. So if you look at the scale, every note that you would have would be a certain vibration or a certain experience. So the 144 is the experience a person would experience on that dimension of this reality, and that is something to be received or something the soul or the spirit is to experience. So the ending times is a time where we have reached the point where we have experienced all these different overtones of these different dimensions that we've experienced. And really, we're on ascending patterns instead of coming down to the physical and experience them and understand them. Now we're going the other way where we've experienced it. Now we're leaving this to experience the next octave in the scale above the 144,000, which we can't name or number or refer to. It's just like the 2012, if nothing, our civilization is winding down. But it doesn't spiral back in the opposite direction after 2012, because that is a product of this third dimensional time that we're in. It's trying to relate what we're experiencing would be a complete consciousness, a dreaming consciousness. Right now, we live in, we experience not only consciousness, but our subconscious mind. And that's through our dream state. So in understanding, time does not relate to a dream, or you can do things in a dream that you can't normally do in the physical world.
Let me just interject for 1 second, because we've got 1 minute left in the show. I just wanted to ask people if they'd like to hear the remainder of our discussion tonight. Please call 646-915-9505. We'd be happy to listen, talk with you. If not, we must say bid you adieu, and check out the rest of this in our archives. And I want to thank you for joining us, and thank you, David, for joining us tonight. And George, please continue. That's 646-915-9505, and you got about 54 seconds remaining. So go ahead, George.
Yeah, well, I want to thank Dave for calling up here. Dave and I have talked for years dealing with sacred geometries.
Well, you know Dave, do you?
Excuse me?
I said, did you know the guy that called?
Yes, I did. I spoke with him recently, and we keep in touch. And
where is he from, George?
I believe he's from the New York area.
Oh,
the island.
516, so I didn't know if... 516 area code, so I didn't know. But, yeah, so go ahead. I'm sorry, George.
Okay, what were we talking about there?
We were kind of talking about the revelation and trying how it in 144,000.
Right.
And how it relates to anything we've been talking about as far as the end times. And I don't quite understand where the 144 come in, you know, other than in its context in the Revelation.
Well, it comes in each note is a subnote to that dimension, which has 12 notes.
Well, you see, what I'm getting at is that, I mean, if you believe in the Akashic Record,
yes.
Then everything is there to judge. You don't need 144,000 people to judge the collective humanity. I mean, everything is there. I mean, if you believe in the Akashic Record. So everything we've ever done in our lives, or many lives, has been recorded and can be verified and... where it goes from there, I have no idea. Whether they judge you as a living, breathing, possible entity that this should be spared, you know.
When you say they judge you, you know, I don't understand.
That's what the Revelation says. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't say it, but what I'm trying to say is that if there is a judgment period, which a billion people in this world believe there will be, you know, if they're all Christian. Or Catholic, then they believe there's a judgment. You know,
mm-hmm.
That there's a coming in. There's a period of revelation. And if that's true, all right, those who will be spared the pit of fire, all right,
there aren't too many of them.
Well, they will be raptured. They will endure a rapture and be brought to heaven, or will be transdimensionalized, all right, into another state,
mm-hmm.
or another consciousness. So they will be escaping this earth as we know it, the third dimension. And that in itself is what you know, most of Christianity is told to believe. Whereas you know, others the Eastern religions, Buddhism, is that you become God, you become one with the universe. Okay, that's Nirvana. And that's what you get after so many thousands of lifetimes, you know, that you reincarnate. The Muslim, they're like we are. They're pretty much like
the religion. It's Islam.
Well, Islam, you know, is the you know, you have the they believe that they believe in Jews. They believe they're descendants of Jews, and the Christians are their brothers, and they are the third coming of Christ, if you will, in Muhammad. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they believe Muhammad is the prophet, and that, you know, they lead to, and they're
they feel that their religion is more evolved than either Judaism or Christianity, because it came after,
right.
Because neither Judaism nor Christianity worked.
Right,
and when
they said they wanted to kill all infidels, infidels are basically the hypocrites. Okay, the hypocritical Jews and the hypocritical Christians who didn't really believe in
practice their religion.
That didn't really practice their faith. You know, and that's where that came about. But then you have that, and you have another third of the world population that's atheist. And another third of the world.
So, you know, where does it end? Because with a polarized view, you're going to see both sides, and both sides are going to have to be part of your experience. See, even, you know, what I was talking about before about the secret.
Yeah.
The secret was good, but you have to understand that you're going to face the consequences of whatever you're seeking. Because it's of you're experiencing both halves, the good and the bad aspect. You just can't have the good aspects. You're going to have bad aspects also.
Well, that's in this dimension, right? That's in this reality.
Uh-huh.
But I said that's in this reality. But in the next dimension, in the fourth or fifth dimension, there that polarity no longer exists.
That's right. That's right.
So you're only so
it's only all good or all bad?
Right.
Well, it's all that's right. Either it's all good or it's all bad.
So you're really, what you're doing when this happens is you're actually in 2012, if that's you're facing your karma. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like
it's either this or that
based upon your the Akashic record and what you've accomplished over your last.
Gosh, I hope I was better than
lives.
I think I am.
You know, many over your many lives. So it's like, I tend to believe that that's possibly true because, I don't know, everything that you strive for in the world, everything that's morally on the high ground, I guess, moral high ground in our society and in our consciousness, is of a good nature. Okay.
That's not true.
Well, what's a bad nature? What are, you know? And
the bad is the same as the good.
I don't agree with you.
Well,
I don't agree with you, George, only because if I follow bad, it leads to bad, it leads to destruction.
Right. But you also will have good behind you, or you'll experience the good that's behind that bad that you're going toward, because that will be that is your challenge.
Now, that's true. That's your challenge, I guess.
So, if you look at it from the other point of view, you're going to receive the opposite. If you're going after the good, you're going to get slapped in the head with the bad also. That doesn't mean it's all going to be bad. It's just part of the consequences of the polarity that you're drawing towards you, the good and the bad.
Well, what you want to do, though, what you strive to do in this life is make life as easy as possible.
That's right. And how do you do that?
Well, you try to make it as easy as possible.
No, you stop thinking about trying to make it possible and just let it happen.
I don't think you strive to make things as easy as possible, because making the right choice doesn't mean it's easy. It might be the harder way.
Well, it's the harder way, but there's an easier way. And the easier way is just feel it instead of understanding it.
Yeah, that's true. I guess you could believe it.
Right. and that's what the ancients or the Mayans are talking about, reaching a place in time where we're not bound by the logic of a polarity of good and bad. Because that is a product of the mind and not the heart.
That's true.
I said before, instead of setting a goal, looking at a linear goal, what you could do is take the feelings of that goal once you reached it and experience that. And you won't have to go through the pains of putting one foot in front of the other and taking a step-by-step approach to an accomplishment you're looking for. The easier way to do it is just to feel it and experience it, and it will happen without the bad effects coming, because the bad effects with a thought did not accomplish the feeling that you're experiencing.
Okay, George. On that note, I think we'll all go to bed. But,
okay, yeah.
we'll take it up next week, but I want to thank you for being with us, George. And
thank David, too, for calling in.
Thanks,
great.
David. Appreciate that.
Yes, thanks, David. Yeah, well, it's always nice speaking with you folks, and I'm sorry for this weather, but I'd like to talk maybe next week about some of the changes that our weather patterns are experiencing, including our oceans.
That sounds good to me.
That sounds good. I think it'd be an informed discussion. That would be great, George. And enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be seeing you tomorrow.
Talk to you soon.
I'll be with you. Thank you.
All right, George.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.